Welcome to the Cognac Expert Calendar Podcast, hosted by Taylor.
So today I have the immense pleasure of speaking with Benedict Hardy from Cognac Hardy. How are you today, Benedict?
Fine. So happy to see you, Taylor. It seems that we speak every year. We have a little show together.
Around this time. Exactly.
Exactly. Exactly right.
So for some of our new listeners, can you tell us who you are and what is your role at Cognac Hardy?
Well, my name, so it's obviously, it's not because I had the same name that I was hired, but it's, I'm the fifth generation of a company that started in the 1850s. Technically, I mean, legally, it started in 1863. It was founded by my great-great-grandfather, an Englishman that became French and fell in love with the Cognac region and decided that he wanted to make his life here, marry here, have children. And that's what we did. We were very lucky to survive the two world wars, which were not easy times, as you know, all know, in France. First of all, the first one was a disaster because we lost so many young men to this stupid war. And the second one, when the Germans were in Cognac, very fortunate that my grandfather spoke German and was one of the guys that helped with Gustav Klebisch, who was the one in charge. And Gustav Klebisch was not like his brother in Champagne. So he understood the value of the Cognac region. He understood the value of the reserve, the quality of the brandy that we were making. And he didn't destroy the vineyards. On the contrary, and very few people know that the Bureau National du Cognac was a German idea. People don't know that. And Gustav Klebisch, because he was recognized by some of the big names of the Cognac region, became the agent for Martell at the end of the Second World War, just to show their recognition and the fact that he protected the Cognac appellation. And the Bureau National was born in 1946. So you can see that it was very clearly something that the very famous negotiations and the House of Cognac, the Hennessy, the Martell of the world, the Remy of the world, discussed with the authorities at the time. So I am the fifth generation of a family which has really been involved in the Cognac production for a very long time. And I'm very fortunate to have kept this product and continue, convey the good word. So technically, my role is like the world ambassador for the Cognac. And on top of that, I am really focused on the American markets. I would say North America. You know, technically, it implies also that I would visit the Caribbean. Well, I don't. Not that I don't like to lay on the beach and enjoy myself, but I have very little time, and Taylor, more than anyone, you know what I mean when I say very little time, because it's always difficult to catch me, as you say.
Whenever I call you, you're on a plane or getting off of a plane.
Exactly right. Exactly right, Taylor. But that's it's part of the job, I think. When you decide, you know, the bottles don't sell itself, but you don't have the big names, that our big leaders have, what you don't have the marketing teams that they have. We're lucky now we have Julie in the house, which is wonderful. But it's definitely yourself. You represent the brand, you have the name. So most of the time it's an immense privilege, but at the same time it's also very heavy on my shoulders sometimes. You know, someday I'm only dreaming of taking a book, being in my room and not doing anything, to be honest with you. And you should have seen me the five past weeks where I was in the States doing dinners after dinners and tastings and things, which is part of the job. And what I really love is to meet new customers and trying to convince them that Cognac is really a marvelous product. So I'm really enjoying it. Some days I'm more tired than others, of course, but I think it goes with any kind of job. I'm not the only one.
Okay. So I have plenty of questions about Hardy and also yourself and your role. But before I get to that, can you tell us what Cognac we are tasting today?
You're tasting something that will never be released. That means the people that would have the opportunity to taste it are going to taste something very unique. 30 years ago, the maître de chez, the blender that was in charge at the facility, his name was Joubert, was a kind of, how could I say, he was a daredevil. he was someone who wanted to go to the extent of his knowledge and try new things. So what he did, he selected exceptional quality wine, because as everybody knows, cognac is a distilled wine. We distill it twice, but what it shows, he wanted to distill with the lees. And at the time, 30 years ago, not many people were doing that. Everybody was trying to move away from the lees and trying to get something a little more. They was thinking that, you know, lees are what? They are dead bacteria, what they are, dead yeast. Some of them can be very detrimental to the taste of your product. But when they are of good quality, which he could judge by tasting the product himself, can bring so much richness to the product. So I think he decided, Marini, to select a few samples from Grand Champagne, and he did that experiment on his own. And we have, I think you saw it even more than me when you came to visit the cellars. We might have 2 barrels of it. So it's something that we keep as something that we will use in blends. It's at 43%. So it's barrel proof. It stayed in oak for 30 years, but it's so rich. It's you fell in love with the product. You selected the product, Taylor. So you know better than me.
I remember when the cellar master showed us. I mean, he said, come to the back of the cellar. He has something he wanted to show us. And I remember when we tasted it, we all were like, it just has such a different texture. It's something to chew on. And at that point, he gave us the whole story about distilling with a large amount of lees. And really, really special cognac.
So great. It's something that we're proud to give you, because it's definitely a gift, in the sense that there won't be any follow-up on that, because what was distilled is whatever we have left will be used in blends, but not as it is. And you're getting a sample of something that will not be matched nor reproduced.
That makes sense.
We're very, very fortunate. So thank you.
You're welcome.
So I just want to get back to your role a little bit. It's clear that you're traveling all the time. You're spreading the word about Hardy. Can you give our listeners an idea of what are you doing? What kind of events are you running when you go to the U.S. for a month, for example?
You have to understand that, better than anybody, you understand the size of the U.S. because you're an American citizen. 50 states for the union, 50 different laws, and except the control states, which are 17 of them, open states with different distributors. So the idea with an importer that is Spiribam for the U.S. for us, they also are very known for their rum, Rum Clément, Rum Agricole, Rum GM, San Lucia Rum. They do a tremendous amount of rum, and they fell in love with Hardy for the quality of the product and for the time that I spent in the market. If there is one market that I really understand and worked for many years, it's the American market. It has changed tremendously since I started. So you have to work with the distributors. That means your importer has also personnel on the ground, and we organize, work with the people that sell in stores. So they select stores, they select restaurants in which they are very well introduced. And my role is to go bring the good word, tasting the product, selecting whatever, when I see a niche, you know, on the shelf or behind the bar, and knowing what I saw. That's part of one aspect of what I do, which is convincing new customers all the time and thanking the ones that are already customers. The second thing that I do a lot of, so that's what my importers call shoe leather, you know? You're definitely I don't believe that anything can happen for a small brand if you don't do that. You have to work your from ground up. I mean, you definitely have to meet the people. You have to listen to what they tell you. Most of the people tell me, cognac. That's interesting. Cognac. I didn't know cognac at the city that named cognac. I don't think the cognac people have done a good enough job. And that's why I'm thankful to people like you at Cognac Expert, trying to bring the good word. You know, of course, we're very grateful to our leaders, and they have really paved the way for us. But I think people have to understand how versatile, how different we all are. And that's part of the job. So what I do too, I do tastings. That means our importer do meet and greet, as they call it, happy hour with the distributor personnel. So we come and do a presentation that I have, explain and taste everybody. We strongly believe that nobody can sell your product if they're not convinced by its quality. So that's part also of my role. And then I do dinners with selected customers, with collectors, where we select special SKUs, our high-end most of the time. And we meet amazing people, people that have collected cognacs or even bourbon or whiskeys or scotches. And a lot, you see a lot of these people that are very interested in discovering something they're not familiar with. And of course, the fact that I'm very involved also into packaging and in understanding that it's true that the liquid has to be fantastic. But I, as my experience tells me, that also a lot of customers are very sensitive to the fact that they like a beautiful decanter in the back bar. They like something that they know it's unique and everything. So I've been really focused on that for many years. So that's how we work with Lanique and we work with amazing people in our industry.
And have you noticed any shifting behaviors or trends? Because you're on the ground so much, speaking to the people consuming your cognac, have you noticed any new trends?
I wouldn't say new trends. There are always new things. I mean, cognac is, it's not as easy as it was a few months back, to be honest with you. But I have seen that coming, and I've been warning even my friends in the competition and say, we are going through to cross a very difficult time. First of all, inflation is not easy on people, and cognac remains a luxury product. I mean, it's a fact. Either you premium or not premium, but still, it's an expensive proposition. What I see is that there is now an understanding on the cocktail side that cognac can be an ingredient which has been overlooked for many years. Prohibition in the U.S., going back to the U.S. market, changed and shifted the way people were buying their liquors, you know, their spirits. All the major, what people don't know is that all the major cocktails that people are familiar with, you can call that Vieux Carré, you can call that Sazerac, Old Fashioned, French 75, Sidecar, they're all made with cognac. When Prohibition hit, and it lasted 20 years nearly, they couldn't find cognac any longer. So, except some people that were smart enough to go to Canada or working with bootleggers, but that's beside the point. But most people couldn't find that. So they turned themselves to gin, to bourbon, to rye. And really, cognac disappeared from the radar. And we have lost this advantage that we had on the cocktail side. Well, now that cocktails are back, which is really interesting, to see all these young mixologists that are probably the age of my children in their 20s, and they are absolutely the one promoting real brands. They are back to old French, Swiss, Italian liqueurs. They are back. They want a real story. They don't want a label. They want something. And I am amazed to see they are the one that are putting back stews and chartreuse that nobody can find anymore. That's so much success that the poor monks don't even have time to pray any longer. The Pope had to remind everyone that the monks of the chartreuse have to pray first. Business is second, which was really interesting. It's only because those kids rediscovered the beauty of this old, amazing product. And I think with cognac, that's the trend that I see. You have no reluctance today to go in a nice place and to say, oh, you don't have a cognac cocktail. Are you planning to have one? And they say, you're right. That's the season now. Yes, we should have a cognac cocktail. And so I see that trend. I think the cognac is more accepted this way than it was before. Not as a digestive that was everybody. It's still that, but it's more than that, which is really nice.
Okay. So it's regaining its place in cocktails as it was in the past.
Exactly. Okay. It's exactly what it is. That's what I see. And I'm glad, you know, Americans are not shy about spending money for these kind of products, which is good.
Okay, cool. Switching subjects a little bit, can you maybe talk about the dry goods situation. I mean, my understanding is it's vastly improved today, but I do remember speaking with you not that long ago, and you were discussing how the dry goods situation was really, really weighing on you guys.
It is for sure what was the biggest change in our industry since the Ukrainian war. Few people know, and particularly in the U.S., how important Ukraine was in the glass production for Europe. When it started and suddenly the Russians were bombing the plants, of course, they were not able to produce the quantity of bottles that they were selling before. So, of course, all the glassmakers over Europe, the French, the Spaniards, the Italians, everybody had to take that influx of new orders, and we saw prices to the roof. And availability also, which was very hard to get. Delays were much longer. So, and after that, everything was the same way. The label, paper, price of paper coming from Finland. Guess what? You never hear that, but the Finnish were on strike for 2 or 3 months or more. And suddenly there was no more paper paste that makes all our labels. Suddenly aluminum went to the roof. So talking about capsules, everything went to the roof. Today, only because the situation is much more difficult, Taylor, and the figures are in the news every day that particularly the United States market for cognac is hurting quite a bit. Well, suddenly everybody knocks out our doors and they're ready to give us discounts and they're ready to give us better delay. So it's improving, yes. If tomorrow the situation changes and we are back to normal, I'm not sure. You know, it's a permanent fight between what we sell and what we buy. So it's, and of course, we don't have the power of a Hennessy of the world or Martell of the world or any of the world, for sure. Right. Okay. So it's a little better. Yes, I cannot say otherwise. It's better.
Okay, good. And so I want to talk now about a significant change that's taken place at Hardy with this redesign and the new bottle. I think this looks great. Can you maybe say a few words about that? What was the motivation behind that? And more generally, what was that process like?
The motivation, there were plenty of motivations to go to our own mold. The first motivation was that we had a private mold before, but the bottle we had was difficult to bottle because they had angles, square angles, and it was very difficult not to break them at the. So we went to a regular bottle that we were buying for Sever Glass. But unfortunately, this bottle was used for rosé wines, olive oil, and everything. And we were tired of having something that was so thin and so many other products and different categories and everything. And I think the other reason was that I was very close friend to a young man, Sébastien Servet, in Paris. He's probably one of the most gifted with his agencies, with his people in design that I know. He works for a lot of our big names in our industry, and he was in love with our rooster, you know, that our coat of arms and the rooster that my great-great-grandfather adopted because he wanted to become French, the Gallic bird. And he's much younger than me, but we really, it was like friendship at first sight. And he told me one day, Benedict, I would love to work for Hardy one of these days. Well, it took us a while because it's not a cheap proposition, and he's so talented. And we worked for 18 months to get that done, and it's just launched. We just redid our website. We're very happy to have Julie Barthélémy, who joined us exactly a year ago as our brand manager, and she has a very, very nice taste, which is key in marketing. And so we went to a bottle that is lighter, eco-friendly. We're moving away from 750, which was the size for the U.S., because now they've accepted 700. Right. So we're moving. And we went with something that is really, even the gift box we're studying, there's no more varnish. That is not good for the environment. We're trying. We're not perfect, Tyler. I'm not saying that suddenly we're going to be the top of the top. We're making some efforts in the right direction, in my opinion. So It was about time. It was time to do the change.
Right. Yeah, it looks good. It's fresh. I like it.
Yes. It's easy. The bottle is easy. I tasted that with some bartenders in New York a few weeks back, and they said, "Oh, we love it. It's nicer, it's not as tall. And, you know, all these elements, you have to be in the trade and you have to do things yourself to understand and to listen to these people, you know.
That's why you hit the road and you talk to these folks.
And you talk to these folks and you put the bottle into their hands and you say, so what are you saying? And they will say, oh, we love it. It's different. And we like the colors. And we want it to be very patriotic. So it's a white, bleu, blanc, rouge. So it's a blue, white, and red, you know, for the VS, VSLP, and XO. And then we have another XO. And of course, the organic, which is really working for us. So, I mean, we try to improve, you know, the goal is to improve.
Fantastic.
We're not always right, but we try to be better.
Great. So if we get back to this cognac, I suppose you talked to the cellar master about this cognac. Do you recall any words that he might have said? Because I know it's a unique cognac and it's kind of a secret cognac, even at Hardy. What did the cellar master perhaps say about this cognac?
He said it was the experience of a man that was a daredevil. And he said what he tried 30 years ago, very few people was doing that. So he said, for me, it is an amazing success. He said, I was amazed myself of the quality of the product, just selecting the right wines. And he said, Benedict, and I was visiting an amazing distillery today that works also for us, Distillerie de la Gasconnière. I don't know if you have ever met this gentleman, near Osillac, which is close to Jonzac. And he has probably the most beautiful distillery and most state-of-the-art product that he produces. And we tasted together his wines. And I could so understood so well why it is so important to have good wines. Let's be very honest. The fact that, you know how careful the people that make table wine in the noble sense of the word are of the quality of the yeast, the quality of the product they make. In cognac, let's be honest, it was not exactly the case because people thought that even mediocre wine because of distillation could be perfect. It is not true. I am absolutely convinced that it's exactly when you make coq au vin. I make my coq au vin with very good wine because I don't think if I put a mediocre wine, that's going to improve my rooster, my coq au vin. It's the same when you distill the cognac, the wine in the cognac region. We need to improve the process. We need to be more eco-friendly and we need to produce wine that have no defect to be better, to produce better cognacs. We will survive in this difficult world if our products remain the benchmark of the brandy business. We need to be better. In order to be better, we need to distill better wine. So what this cognac that you selected, that I deselected with you, I think it's exactly in his experience, someone that was doing that 30 years ago was a visionary. He was someone that, because they were, of course, the people that were producing this quality of wine were very careful. And it was more expensive, of course. But he didn't flinch. He didn't stop on that. He said, this is what I think. I need to distill on these. I need to find the right people to do that. And he did. So I think my blender is in awe, really, of the result. 30 years. He said, Benedict, this product can last another 30 years and it will only improve. And that's amazing to hear that because sometimes everybody knows that sometimes some cognac has can fade. He said, I don't see this one fade because of the richness that he had from the get go. Right. So that's exactly what the blender said. I talked to him about it yesterday. So, you see, right. To refresh my memory.
But would you say that distilling with the lees, and in this case, distilling with a larger proportion of lees, that creates a cognac that can age a lot longer without getting any wrinkles?
Absolutely. I strongly believe that you need to, it's like a kid that you raise. You need to give him food from the beginning. you need to make sure you control the growth this way and help the growth. So yes, I'm convinced of that. And I could see that for a while, we were also adding some cognac that were, you know, getting rid of the lees for many people meant more elegance. But for me, they're thinner. And because they're thinner, they don't age as well. So this is something that Michael, I call him Michael because I spent too much time in the US, our blender, Michael, I said, what we tasted side by side, one that were distilled without lees and with lees all the time. And only also all the time, I think the one distilled with lees are richer, more depth, more. It's longer on the palate. It's really something that you know that, Taylor, because you have tasted them too. And that doesn't mean that we cannot add some that are not distilled with lees, but I think it's a very subtle balance between the two. And that's what Michael does best. It's like balancing the act to get the product. So on this one, 43%, absolutely 30 years, nothing younger than 30 in that blend. Gold Chopin, and it's something really different. And I'm glad you selected it.
Yeah, and different from what we're seeing from the rich and ultra balanced hearty blends that we normally see. So it's nice to just see something different. And you mentioned that Michael thought of the person who distilled this as a daredevil. And I kind of got that feeling from Michael himself. Not maybe daredevil's not the right word, but I feel like Michael is someone who is very keen on experimenting, trying new things, and not just sitting still. Can you maybe comment on that?
I wish he would be with me today. You know, he's distilling, as a matter of fact, as I speak. But yes, he's someone that loves to experiment new things. He's working on oak right now. He's working on something that you have in oak, which is called lignin. I don't even know that I can translate that because I don't talk about that very much.
And I only know it in French too.
That lignin is what has the most sugar, you know, natural sugar. He's totally convinced that the oak that we're using, the Limousin oak, by itself, we haven't even covered half of what we can get from that oak. And going towards the direction of nothing added, no sugar added, no caramel. He said that's the way to go. We have to work. So he's the kind of guy that is not afraid of making experiments. And he said, I was wrong. It was not good. I'm going to try again. And he's amazing in the sense that he's the third generation of distiller and wine grower. And he just has all these experiments, all this experience in his bag. And he's not afraid to say, oh, well, that was not good enough. I'm not. So you're right. You understood exactly what he has. Sometimes he can speak very strongly and he's very opinionated. And we buck heads. Good Lord. Yes, we do. Because sometimes I say, Michael, don't speak like that. Don't say that and everything. So, but he's an interesting guy because he cannot leave you lukewarm. I mean, you like him or you don't like him, but his cognacs are always extremely balanced and he's very curious about experimenting new things all the time. And I really appreciate that with him.
Right. Yeah. He clearly knows what he's doing and there's a reason for everything that he does,
yeah,
which is great.
Absolutely.
Now, this might be a trick question because I know you've been traveling all the time. Have you tasted this cognac?
Well, it's funny you say that. Not yet. Okay. Honestly, we discussed that yesterday when he called me and I wanted more details on the product. No, I've not tasted the cognac. But he kept me some. He said, I have a sample in my office. Come anytime. So I saw him today at that distillery I was mentioning you, La Gascogne. But he didn't bring the sample with him, so I didn't taste it. So I said, well, I'm going to speak with Taylor and I haven't tasted it. So, no, yes. I would lie if I would tell you that I tasted it, but I plan to do it.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I understand. Every time we talk, you're moving left and right and on a plane and everything. But I can personally attest, and my colleague who was there, Natalie, who was there, and Michael himself, we all tasted this in the cellar, and we were chewing on it because it was so rich from this really high proportion of lees, and it's old, but like so many Grand Champagne cognacs, it just was so intact and not a wrinkle at all. So
yes,
fantastic, fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Glad you liked it because you selected it, so I'm glad you like it.
we've not really met any hearty cognacs we don't like, so.
Thank you.
Well, listen, Benedict, it's always a pleasure speaking with you. I thank you very much for your time out of your busy schedule. at this busy end of year period. So thank you for your responses to my questions. I look forward to the next time seeing you and chatting with you. And above all, I wish you happy holidays and get some rest from all your travels.
Yes, thank you.
Fantastic.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your support all these years.
Again, thank you very much. Bonne fête, and we'll see you soon.
Okay.
Thanks. Au
revoir. Au revoir.
Thank you for listening to the Cognac Expert Calendar podcast. Tomorrow is another day, another cognac.